Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Canucks Central, it's the place you come for your chocolate bar debate. Scott Rintoul, Mick Nizar.
Were you guys doing this on the show too?
We were not. It just happened during the break. I happened to be out there grabbing a hot beverage, and Jamie was a little bit peckish. So he went out to the vending machine, decided to throw a toonie in there, and he decided he was going with a chocolate bar today. I mean, your first decision is, am I going chocolate bar or chips? It depends what kind of mood you're in.
Yeah.
I'm not going to slag one here, but that's your first decision. Then after that, you got to make a choice. And he went with Twix, and I like it. I have it as the number two ranked bar in there. I thought it was a great selection. I have Snickers ahead of it, but
it's had a good season. It's on the rise.
Fantastic. Snickers is a bar that also you're getting a little bit more of a meal. Mm-hmm. So you got to be in the right mood for that. It is a top-ranked bar, but you're getting a little extra. If you're just like, hey, I want some chocolate, I want some sugar, but it's more of a snack to me, that's a great choice.
Well, it's reminiscent of like the Elias Pettersson draft. Like, did you want the guy with the high floor, which is, you know, Nolan Patrick? That's all well and good. And you take Snickers, or do you want the upside of Twix? I think you got to take the Twix. That's the Elias Pettersson of candy choices. Right
with
there.
All due respect to Nolan Patrick, he is not a Snickers bar, okay?
You I meant going into the draft,
you want to talk Miro Heiskanen as a Snickers bar? We want to talk Cale Makar? Okay, now we're on the same page. Elias Pettersson, perhaps a Snickers bar as well. That's why you come here, for the debate on that. No, you come here for Canucks talk, and we will get into that. There's no action to recap. We'll get into a couple other stories around the hockey world. But the Canucks don't play till Sunday. Next time out, it's Anaheim, and people were hopeful the next time out it would be Brock Besser. Travis Green just spoke down at Rogers Arena. Will Brock Besser play on Sunday? Is there any update?
No. He's going to see our doctors tomorrow night. Won't be playing tomorrow night. And reevaluate it tomorrow night.
So guys, intensity's gone up, and the thing that's been noticeable, there's been some fights, guys you wouldn't expect. Is that what's that tell you about your team that you've seen?
Yeah, I think it's just that time of year where the games, you nailed it. The intensity in the games are going up. The value of the points mean the same, but it feels like they don't, which is always the case every time at this time of the year. And the competitive nature of the games are a little higher.
I mean, the crowd gets revved up. What's that do for your bench, for your team when you see that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just emotion in the game. I think there's a lot of energy in our building right now. There has been all year. I think it's just a case of guys competing hard and standing up sometimes for each other, standing up for themselves.
So you had options. What made Brandon Sutter the right fit to take Brock's spot on the power play, the top power play?
Well, we liked the look of the second unit. Didn't want to disrupt that. Sutz was going to be the guy that was going to go in. And there's been times where we've used Brock down low, and we like the right shot option down there. And one thing about Sutz is he's a smart player. He's got good hands when you watch him, and he's got a real good understanding of the game from an offensive side, and he's known for the defensive side, but he understands the game well. And even the play he made the other night was, it's a pretty good play.
Travis, off the board a bit, 10-year anniversary of the USA-Canada gold medal game coming up here. Would you remember exactly what you were doing on that day?
I don't know, remember exactly, but I know I was watching the game, and proud moment, and obviously, time flies, that's for sure, but it's nice to remember those times.
Get nervous watching anything like that ever, or just a hockey coach?
Yeah, I don't know if nervous is the right, a little bit. When it's Canada playing, you're always hoping that they win. So,
how do you determine at this time of year when you guys days off and when to practice? Is there a balance that you strike there as far as,
it is. We have a lot of discussion about it. We don't just think about it for 5 minutes and come up with a decision. We go through it with our staff, our medical staff, our strength staff. There's so much you know, we have a lot of measurements that we use with guys nowadays, technology and whatnot, that we can kind of see where they're at. And we felt like our guys needed, you know, a little bit of rest here. It's going to heat up, and you want to take advantage of it. But it wasn't like they just stayed home. They were in today working out, back on the ice tomorrow, and it is a fine balance.
So no Brock Besser on Sunday. He'll be reevaluated this weekend. Canucks don't play until Wednesday after that afternoon affair with the Ducks on Sunday. So there's time, depending on how much he needs. We'll wait and see with Brock Besser. And we still don't know exactly what the injury is.
Yeah.
I think most people think it's something to do with his shoulder. There's a possibility it's a pec injury as well, just the way that his arm went back. A lot of people think it's a separated shoulder, which sounds a lot worse than it is. It's that AC joint that's in question. Canucks are winning their last couple of games. They got Anaheim in here on Sunday. Can never say anything is a sure win, but that is a team they should take care of. And when you're winning, and you know this, you're top of the division, it's a lot easier to give guys extra rest.
Yeah, and the thing with Anaheim is it's a team you obviously should be clearing, right? But they have a little bit of quality to just scare you enough. But it is one of those ones that you have to be getting 2 points out of. But you're right, because of the situation they're in. Again, this is what happens when you build yourself a cushion. This is why January was so important that they had that run, is they can take a bigger picture view and make better long-term decisions. Remember that conversation we had in December when they were 4 points out of a playoff spot? We kept sitting here thinking, I don't know where you put Markstrom in, like when do you put him on the bench and get Demko a game? And so he started a run of games, and then Demko played one, and then there was Markstrom again.
This sets up, by the way, and I know they didn't address it today, and Travis Green wouldn't answer anyway, this sets up as a Demko start to me.
Right, and we'll find that out maybe, you know, tomorrow, Sunday, whatever it is. But they can take longer picture views and make bigger picture decisions because of being 3 points up in the division, albeit with the game played extra. But that's what this allows you to do, being 6 points clear of the playoff bar. That's what this allows you to do.
Well, and it's a nice feeling to have, I imagine, when you are going to be scoreboard watching, but you're not sweating, are we going to fall out of the playoff picture?
Yes.
Like, there's nothing that can happen over the course of the next couple of days that can knock the Canucks out of the playoff picture, despite the fact they're not playing from Wednesday until Sunday, and then they're not going to play until Wednesday again. As long as they take care of their business on the weekend, you don't have to sit there thinking, man, when we get ready to go back out on the road, we could actually be beneath the playoff bubble, as long as you take care of Anaheim.
The Canucks are going to wake up on Sunday in first place. Right? So, like, that's what's going on here, right? So they can make big, important decisions with a longer view in mind, because it buys you time.
Well, and here's the other aspect of this. They don't have to worry about the wild card aspect right now. We may get to a point where they do. If they have a little bit of a nosedive here, they go through, take a few lumps, they could be talking wild card at some point. But right now, they're only worried about those top three divisional spots. Every team that is tracking them right now has an issue. Edmonton has the McDavid and now Cassian issue, which we'll get to in just 1 second. Vegas can't get out of its own way issue. I don't know. They're finding ways to win games, but it is all over the map. You tell me what your read is on Vegas right now. Just when it looks like they're getting it together, they lose 4-0 to the Minnesota Wild the other night. And then they have to go 6-5, insane game against the Blues last night. Calgary, without Mark Giordano, without Travis Hamonic. They just played down in the Golden State, which doesn't offer a lot of resistance. But they're coming home. They got the Blackhawks tomorrow. And we'll see how desperate Chicago is. Arizona, 3 wins in its last 15 games. Nobody chasing them right now has things going their way.
And then Winnipeg, Nashville, you know, you're talking about the Pacific Division, but the teams right behind them. Like, at this point, Winnipeg's kind of in the driver's seat for wild card two, more so than Arizona, who has that spot right now. 2 games in hand and a point back, right?
You could argue if you wanted Nashville just because of games in hand,
yeah.
But they haven't played consistently enough, probably to your point, over the course of the year, that you have a high degree of confidence.
And that's fair, too. It's 3 points back with 4 games in hand, which is, we keep wondering when these games are going to finally catch up. But Arizona looks like they're out of it, you know, driver's seat-wise. And so you keep looking at Vancouver, it's, yeah, you're right. Like, who's going to catch up to these who's going to catch up to the standard that they've kind of set for the Pacific Division? And now, look, we've made plenty of comments about the Pacific Division, but somebody has to lead it. And right now, that's the Vancouver Canucks. And because all those teams have issues, and the Canucks have their own, it's just their biggest issues is a Brock Besser injury, which, by the way, like, can get papered over to some degree. A, because of Jacob Markstrom. B, because there's depth on the wing with JT Miller, Jake Virtanen stepping up. Like, there's players who can step up in the short term to fill a Brock Besser injury. It's not Quinn Hughes. It's not Elias Pettersson.
So we've been lockstep for a while that this is a playoff team. Yep. Do you have them as the front runner to win this division? Does that even matter?
I don't think it matters.
I would still have Vegas as the front runner. They're close enough, and they've got enough firepower, mm-hmm. and they're probably going to do something at the deadline. I have Vegas as the front runner still, even though Vancouver has a solid case right now, especially with the way Jacob Markstrom is playing.
The quickest fix to any of these teams is Vegas. It feels like if they get one top four D-man, that solves a lot of issues. Vancouver can, again, this is free money to them. If they want to be aggressive, they can do that. That's not something I would subscribe to, but it's open to do that. For Vancouver, really, to approach this deadline, for me, it's you approach it in, can we make a short-term move that also helps us down the road? So they're trying to do the hockey trades that we talk a lot about. Now, there's different ways to do that, but they don't have to make a rental move. They don't have to. Vegas, to me, has to make a rental move. That's why the urgency for them is different than the urgency for Vancouver.
Don't make a rental move, make a rental move.
There you go.
That can be our new slogan. That's what we'll do. Scott Rental, Bick, and Nazar. I did hear something on one of our other shows yesterday that I do disagree with, and it was Randy who said, as long as the Canucks make it to the playoffs, the rest is gravy. It's a success no matter what. I disagree with that.
No, again, but then you're changing the expectations.
No, I'm not.
Yes. What would you have said in September?
Of course I would have said, get to the playoffs.
So there you go. Like, that's what the goal that needs to be met.
So it doesn't matter what happens in the playoffs if they get
there. We can evaluate what they did over or grade what they did over the course of the season. So if they finish first in the Pacific, A+ on what the goal was this year. Because
no question.
Goal was
sure.
Make the playoffs. Then you're just grading, well, how well should I feel? If they lose in round one, does it suck? Yeah, of course. But
no, it all depends how. And that was more my point than anything else. It does depend how, Bick. It really does. Okay, go into the first round, get swept.
Mm-hmm.
Go into the first round up 3-1 and lose that series to what appears to be an inferior opponent. You going to feel like that's successful?
Yes, because you judge it on where you... Because if you constantly make knee-jerk changes, you're constantly making knee-jerk changes to your plan as well. If you're just judging it on, well, in February 14th, they were first place and they probably should have won a round or two.
I guess where I quibble is, while I agree, yeah, making the playoffs, okay, that overall big picture, that's successful. That's what this team needed to do. And it also, I think this is an underappreciated storyline. Getting that pick off the books as quickly as possible, not having it as an overarching storyline, mm-hmm. I do think that is somewhat important. You just don't want to have that hanging mm-hmm. around going, oh, geez, we better make the playoffs next year. You don't want that hanging around, even though this looks like a great draft. I guess the part I quibble with is that it's gravy. It doesn't matter. Like that what happens in the playoffs doesn't matter to the big picture. It does.
Is the fear of that because the Pacific Division, like...
It's not the fear.
No, but of losing it around one, right? I think you're looking at it as a missed opportunity because the way the Pacific is set up.
It just depends how. It's absolutely acceptable for this team to make the playoffs and lose in round one, depending on how that script goes. But there are ways that it is not going to feel acceptable. And you are going to judge players, maybe coaches, differently if it goes down a certain way. I hope we're not having that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's not the discussion we're having, but it's a possibility.
In the scenario you're talking about, okay, let's say it's a collapse and you lose three in a row, whatever, like something like that. Like, to me, that speaks to, okay, that's one of the learning processes. And I hate the idea that you have to lose to learn how to win.
I agree with that.
But,
you and I are right there on that.
But we know that there's another level to the playoffs. I think that's the important key to learn, right? And if that's what's taken away, to me, that's still progress.
If you can prove, you learn from it. And I would hearken back to the last time the Canucks made the playoffs. Now, based on what we expected.
Yes, that's a different story, though.
Based on what we expected, which was not a team that had over 100 points and not a team that was necessarily going to make the playoffs.
But the team was built to try to do that. That's a different story.
This team was built to try to make the playoffs.
But it's in different timelines. Like, this is the first chance of
that's
trying to
fine,
make that.
But why is that playoff loss viewed so poorly? Is it because Calgary was garbage? No. Calgary wasn't garbage. It's because that series appeared to be within your hands. That the solution was right in front of your face and you couldn't find it. And that's why people have so much trouble. And then obviously things fell apart after that. So there is a scenario. All I'm suggesting is there's a scenario that exists. The Canucks get to the playoffs and you go, hey, I see it as successful. But if you miss what appears to be just an obvious solution for you to move through to the next round, that is going to feel far different than if you lose to what you consider a better team or an equal team or, hey, they played well, but that's just what happens, and that's part of the growing process.
Kind of like Toronto-Washington.
Yes. Leafs lost in the first round. Okay, they're playing the Washington Capitals. That's mm-hmm. fine. And they had some measure of success, and they'll learn from this, and this is a young team. And then what happens? They get ousted by the Boston Bruins. And then what happens again? They get ousted by the Boston Bruins, and we'll see if they get ousted by the Boston Bruins again this year. I did want to hear what you had to say about Zach Cassian last night. Any excuse whatsoever? I saw people somehow trying to defend it, trying to make it less than it was. He didn't pierce Eric Chernak's sternum. He didn't put his skate through his chest cavity. But I have no idea how people were saying this isn't as big a deal as it is.
We have to, and we talk about this a lot, we have to start penalizing intent, right? And it doesn't matter that Chernak wasn't hurt or he, you know, wasn't pierced at all. You can't kick guys with a skate. Like, that's not Happy Gilmore. What's the line from Happy Gilmore? He's like, oh, I was still the only guy to take off my skate and try. This isn't that, man. You can't kick people. And I'm not even sure what the justification is. I'm sure you got texts all throughout the show. I'm seeing a couple now rolling 650, 650.
Well, the justification is kind of what Zach Cassian rolled out after the game. Listen, he's pinning us down. I'm just trying to get him off me. I'm just trying to get him off me. And because of the position I'm in, I just kind of kick it. I didn't kick him, though, because if I'd done that, he could have gotten hurt and you would have seen a penalty call. And because those things didn't happen, it's really not that big of a deal. No, it is a big deal. And the rule is very clear on this, which is why it is an open and shut case and why he's going to get suspended. I don't know what the number is going to be, but he's also a repeat offender. So it's going to be more than some people think the actual act warrants.
Pretty quick return on a repeat offender.
Yes.
He's just talked to the Department of Player Safety last month.
But this is open and shut. The rule is very clear. If you kick someone or attempt to kick someone, that's a match penalty, automatic. And the fact that a match penalty was not called in the situation last night hurts him. Because if there's punishment within the game, they factor that in. There was no punishment within the game. He's a repeat offender. This is going to be pretty cut and dried to me.
Yeah, it's, you know, he's waived his in-person hearing, so he's going to just do it by phone. But, you know, it feels like it's going to be six. It's going to feel like it's going to be well over that. You know, I think it was Hershey last night just talking about, you know, how dangerous that play is. I don't know if I put it on par with the Miles Garrett thing, which is what Hershey was talking about, but I mean, it's not far from that. It's, again, that's intent to injure.
When you saw this in the wake of the Miles Garrett situation, did he really get him in the head with his helmet? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
People breaking down Dude, he swung a helmet at a guy's head that did not have a helmet on it.
As soon as you go to do that, like, that's it. And you, what's funny, too, this is another cross-sport reference here. We saw today, like, Manchester City got banned for 2 seasons from the Champions League. Like, that's a team or a governing body coming down hard on a situation. We see in the MLB, the Astros. It's like, okay, they did some things that could have been harsher, right? The NFL takes a hard line on Myles Garrett. What's the NHL going to do? Because the precedent suggests they'll be kind of kind on it. But this is a serious issue, and it needs to be dealt with. You know,
I'm not sure the precedent suggests they'll be kind on it.
But, okay, well, then that's them being inconsistent, kind of, because they...
Yes, but here's the problem. We can't keep hearkening back to, well, you didn't do this in this situation, so it's okay if you don't do it here. And that's part of the reason people are defending it, because of the Zdeno Chara incident this week.
Yes.
They screwed that up.
Yes.
They screwed it up. There's no other way to cut it. He needs to have a suspension. That doesn't need to be 10 games, but that needs to be a suspension, what he did to Brendan Gallagher. And a $5,000 fine, that screams of, well, we really like Zdeno Chara, and we're going to use the tall, short excuse here and just go with that. Dude, you cross-checked a guy in the throat. Can't happen.
What's right, I agree with you. Like, that's what's right. Treat every incident as an isolated incident, and, you know, obviously take your back history with the player, but there's never the wrong time to do the right thing. So if the NHL decides, you know what, from now on, this is a 10-game suspension, we have to do that, I'm pro that, but let's be real here. They have been inconsistent, and that's what I fear.
This one comes from Kyle in Queens. Been really struggling the last couple of days with my love affair with the NHL. I firmly believe the league is being undermined by a very poor front office. The Department of Player Sacrifice, instead of safety, he says, makes decisions that make zero sense after watching Chara try to permanently destroy Gallagher's ability to talk and getting a slap on the wrist with a $5,000 fine and no suspension. How can I stomach the inevitable Cassian suspension? Is what it's going to be, and what should he get? My disgust is approaching a dangerous level with this league, and it saddens me to see. I don't know what the Cassian suspension is going to be. If I had to guess right now, 8. That's the number I'll throw up.
Yeah, I'd just be guessing. I want to say 8, 9, somewhere in that range. So that feels right. Another one here. You just said penalized intent. There was zero intent to injure from Cassian. I still think he deserves 5 games, but there was zero intent to injure. But Char, on the other hand, whole another story. That's from Nichols. Look, when you lift your skate off the ice, if you are unaware of what you're doing, that's a bigger issue too. But as soon as you direct your blade towards another guy, that's intent to injure. That's... I don't know how to explain it any other way.
And I know what he's getting at.
Yes.
Cassian,
he was trying to do something else.
He didn't use full force. He didn't try to kick him off as hard as he could. He either let up or was just trying to scare him, whatever it is. Bottom line is, that is not a line you can cross. As soon as you go down that road, you're done. Mm-hmm. It's over. Now, how bad is it? You hit someone with your car. You've hit someone with your car.
Mm-hmm.
You're guilty. Now, how bad is it? How bad is that? Did you kill someone with your car? Did you bump them and now they got a broken leg? Okay, depending on the way that went, we'll determine exactly what the punishment's going to be. Injury does factor in. If he had really hammered Eric Chernak, this would be a far stiffer suspension. Zach Cassian's getting, I don't know, 8 games, maybe. I hear what the texter is saying. Ah, it's a 5-game suspension. I think it might be a 5-game suspension with somebody who never had a prior track record. Maybe. Maybe that's the kind of conversation we're having. But with a guy who just came off a suspension, even though I don't think the league wanted to suspend him there, I think in that case with the Matthew Tkachuk, I think they went, we can't have these optics.
Right.
Within the old code of the game, we get it. Like, I almost feel like George Parros had this conversation with Cassian. Listen, man, I totally understand. And the hockey enforcer in me feels that. But we can't have the optics of you ragdolling a guy who doesn't want to fight. We can't have that for our game, so I'm giving you 2 games. Can't have the optics of a guy kicking a guy. You just can't have it, whether he really got him or not.
Yeah, because if you go light on it, you're not encouraging, but you're not setting the punishment enough. And maybe it crops up again. And we've seen it with, like, Pronger stamping on a guy. And it's not a direct comparable, but...
And that was 8 games.
Yeah, that was another blade being used to attack someone, basically.
We talk about it all the time when somebody gets a skate cut.
Mm-hmm.
With Mikheyev in Toronto this year, that's an accident. And people are like, okay, we might need to have...
Got it.
Sure, we might need to have mandatory wrist guards for these players so that these situations don't happen again. You remember with... Everything that happened, we went, man, do we need mandatory neck guards?
Clint Malarchuk and all that, yeah.
Richard Zednik.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, does that need to happen? Is that a discussion we need to go down? And that's an accident. And every time that happens, what do we say? I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often, just randomly. And this is anything but random.
Mm-hmm.
Anything but random. Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar, Alex Ault. Our pleasure to have him join our program next. I wonder what this week has been like for him. We'll talk a little bit of Sedins, and we'll get into some of these NHL stories as well. crazy to me that that incident last night overshadows maybe the bigger story in all of this. And we'll get to it next right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
I feel like the fans are very deserving of, you know, having a playoff team here. They've been, you know, really patient and loyal throughout this rebuild. And, you know, right now we have given ourselves a good chance and put ourselves in a good spot, but we got to keep pushing and we got to keep getting better every day to be successful here.
Jacob Markstrom, not sure we're going to see him this weekend. My suggestion would be that we do not. We'll wait and see. You and I have long been of the opinion that it's not really worth questioning the goaltending decisions. By and large, they've been the right ones. And there's not much to quibble with. Markstrom's had a great year, better than great. Vezina Trophy conversation type of season. Thatcher Demko has had an excellent season as well. Whoever they go with, that'll be just fine. Thank you very much. There hasn't been a lot of second guessing. There's the odd person.
Ian Clark's been the guy at the blackjack table. He's on a heater, man. You don't get up from the table when you're on a heater.
No, you do not.
He's making peak decisions.
Bruce Boudreau was asked to get up from the table.
Yeah.
And he will be playing at a different table at some point. I don't know when. I don't think he'll be out of work long if he wants another job. Might not be Pete DeBoer or John Hines type hiring within this season, just given where we are in the schedule. But that's a guy who'll get a job if he wants one. He's a quick turnaround artist, despite the fact he hasn't been on extended playoff runs.
I'm both surprised and not surprised. If you told me a new GM wanted a new coach from that angle, I say I'm not surprised by the coaching change. But I'm surprised at the where we are in the calendar, right? It's late. What were your expectations coming into the season? And that's why self-evaluation is so important. If they had playoff aspirations and Guerin felt Boudreau wasn't living up to him, okay, I guess, but then you should also be evaluating your team. What did you expect for the season?
So Guerin said today, I've been thinking about this for a while. It's never just one thing, but he also said that's a game we should have won last night. Up two goals, Rangers come back, controversial shootout winner. Mm-hmm. Aldi may want to weigh in on
yes.
Panarin's shootout winner and whether or not he thinks it should have counted. He's a goaltender, so I think I know where this might be going. Bottom line is, Minnesota in its last seven games, 4-1-2. It's not as though they've been playing poor hockey.
No, and that's one of the things Boudreau does for you. He'll get you to a baseline. I know there's flaws in the playoffs, but to me, he's one of the top 10 best coaches in the league because he gets you to a baseline and he'll get you to the playoffs consistently.
Alex Auld, one of the best in the league, joins us now for his weekly hit with us here on Canuck Central. How are you, Aldi?
I'm doing very well, and I'm scrambling to Google this shootout winner.
Oh, you're going to hate it so much.
I'm going to hate it. All right.
I hated it for you already.
Because what's in question on the play is whether or not the puck was still going forward. We're not going to press you on it right now. I will ask you about Bruce Boudreau, them moving on from him right now. Try to put yourself in that locker room, Aldi. What are players thinking today?
You know, it's always a tough situation when a coach gets fired. It's never fun, and as a player, you feel responsible for someone's life being so affected. You know, their livelihood being affected, their ability to obviously possibly work in the NHL again. Like it's a tough thing to go through as a player. You know, one thing, and again, this is a coach I've never had, but the timing of it surprises me a bit, but I'm not surprised by almost any coaching change nowadays, because that's essentially the nature of the beast. You're hired to be fired. And this is a coach who's sort of had this history of doing some good things in the regular season but then that kind of being it. And this is a really tough season for Minnesota. And I heard you guys before I joined you, like it is a bit of the self-assessment and where are you at and what are your expectations and all of those sorts of things. I wonder if it maybe has something to do with some of the other big name guys that are available and wanting to make sure you're sort of free and clear and know exactly what it is you want when the hiring season sort of does start.
You know, when you look at these, you know, coaching changes we've seen this year, Do you also kind of reflect back to, okay, who's bounced back from it? And is that an indicator of, you know, how teams got along with their coach? Because I do look at San Jose a bit and say, you know, they didn't really come back after the coach firing. And, you know, players take a bit personal responsibility at times that, man, we were part of a team that got a coach fired, someone who lost their job. What do you, you know, like, how do you look at teams after a coaching firing?
Well, you almost always see that sort of short-term bump, and it's a wake-up call, obviously, and the players, there's usually more effort that comes out of it. But over the long term, then, it comes down to what is the new coach doing that's different, and are they able to implement a new system? Are they able to motivate in a different way? Obviously, all these coaching changes come for different reasons, and some of them are because the message has grown stale. Some of them are systematic and saying, hey, like, the what this coach wants us to do isn't working, so we need to make a change. But I always look for that response, like I do throughout the season, even if it's the same coach. How do these players respond? How does the team respond? I heard you guys talking a little bit yesterday about San Jose specifically and moving on from guys like Pavelski. And you know, I wanted to chime in the moment, so I'm going to go back to that a little bit, actually. And it's interesting. For years in San Jose, they believed that, and this was the talk when they added Evander Kane. It was like, we can absorb personalities into our room because we have this strength of culture here. And a lot of that was Marlowe, Thornton, Pavelski, the guys who'd been there so long, and they were rock solid. This veteran group, much like the Red Wings, with a young guy like Sean Avery, he didn't rock the boat in Detroit because it was all Hall of Famers who laughed at him, right? And in San Jose, they were able to manage personalities. But as soon as you start taking away the top quality key character guys, and then a guy like Joel Thornton gets older and he's not as productive and not as integral to your on-ice performance, those things start to creep in as well. So I'm not surprised that a team like San Jose, like, they need to re-identify their leadership and find what their core is in terms of who's driving the bus in the dressing room. So there are coaching changes are so unique. But at the same time, I mean, Bruce Boudreau is in that timing of, hey, he's kind of run his course in terms of where, how the length of time he's been in a market and able to be successful. And that's kind of, you know, when you're looking at regular season success, and he's sort of up against that timeline now.
I'm wondering if you've ever encountered this during your days in the NHL. Alex Auld with us here on Canuck Central, because I know that in this business, which can be a very volatile one, I have worked at places where someone gets let go, or someone doesn't get the promotion that they probably deserved, and it's one of the core people, and you say, what's going on here? And it shakes your belief in the operation. It shakes your belief in management. And I do wonder if that's one of the things down in San Jose with Pavelski. Hey, it's not that we don't think Evander Kane's a great player. It's not that we don't think Erik Karlsson's a great player. But Joe Pavelski is a freaking shark. And when you don't find a way to keep him here, what are we really doing?
Well, that is interesting. I mean, that is one of those things. But at the same time, you also see teams that, I can't believe it's San Jose, that cut bait on guys, and it's the right time, right? You see guys that are so just ingrained in an organization, and then you look back with hindsight, and you're like, yeah, that was the right time to do it. That makes sense. But it is something when it's your sort of heart and soul leader, that can affect things, and that can change the dynamic. And who knows? I mean, the fact that a coaching change came not too long after that, like, you just, if a coach is wearing thin on the group, maybe the captain, maybe the leadership group is a big part of it, not being able to fray the fabric of the group too much. They're able to sort of be that buffer. And maybe that was part of the reason as well. I don't know, a lot of speculation in San Jose, but I do agree with you, Scotty, that can be something where you look around and you're like, this just doesn't add up. This guy's way too important. And how do we not find a way to make this work? But it's always that fine line in a sports team, because it's like, if someone else isn't getting paid, there's more for me. And there's that strange dynamic of this being asked to be selfless in so many ways. Yet there's certain points in your career where you have to be a little bit selfish, and guys weigh that differently in terms of where they're at in their career and their family and all of those sorts of things. And if that balance gets thrown out of whack, then it can be difficult to recover from.
We've filled our San Jose quota for the month.
Yes.
Locally, what was this week like for you?
Oh, I wish they would have played the Sharks. I think that would have been the matchup. No, it was special. You know, it's given us a lot to talk about, obviously, but in a good way. Not like, oh, we've got lots to talk about so we can fill some airtime. It's because of the power of these two players, the what they mean to the community, what they've meant to the organization. It's Daniel and Henrik Sedin are just two quality individuals. And it's just been so fun to kind of go back down memory lane through the stories and all the different people that came into town, and to just see the celebration of, and it became more than just a celebration of the two of them. It became a celebration really of an era. And you could break it down further into two eras, sort of their early years in the National Hockey League, obviously seeing former teammates from that sort of generation of Naslin and Trevor Linden and Matthias Olin and the original management group that brought them to Vancouver. And then that second generation, the 2011 Cup final team, that team is that probably is, you know, that most prolific generation of Canucks hockey during the Sedins in their peak. And it's pretty special to have kind of just witnessed it all and have a bird's eye view of it. A pretty impactful week. A couple things that I take away from it all are, like, it's so nice that, and I imagine that ownership is pumped for multiple reasons, but the fan base as well, the coaching staff, the organization, happy that all of this celebration is happening, and there's something to be celebrated on the ice. It just seems like such a fitting turning of the page, much like it did at the end of the Sedin's career, when you started to see the impact that some young players were having, you know, Brock Besser's rookie season and Pettersson on the horizon and all of that, and this jersey retirement in the midst of what looks like the Canucks' return to the playoffs, that seems to be just so fitting and storybook, like almost everything in these two guys' life is, and it's such a beautiful thing to watch.
Well, to me, just if you step back and try to analyze the sports fan in this market, I did wonder, as all of this was going on, that as people got perspective, and I think they got a lot more on 2011, and I think we saw that, as much as that scar will always exist, if you can only have your team either win or have an organization and people you're proud of, what would you rather have as a sports fan? Of course you want your team to win, but is it all business or is there something personal attached? And I wonder where Canucks fans in general come out on that. But I think the fact that some people would come out on the side of, you know, if they can just be really good and come close to winning, but I'm proud of the organization, I'm proud of the people, and I'm proud of the work they do in the community, maybe I would opt for that. I think the fact that that discussion's happening, Aldi, is maybe just gives you perspective as a sports fan, doesn't it?
And then you tie that into the debacle that was the press conference down in Houston yesterday with the Astros.
Lord.
Absolutely. I want people I'm proud of. And I want to, you know, and it's not like that was just a blip season that they went to the final. Like, they were the dominant team in the Western Conference, and they were so good for so long right across the league. So, absolutely. I mean, and that was, you know, I didn't listen to much of the post-game shows during the week, but Satshaw, he sort of shared a story with me that the caller called in and broke down in tears on the air. It was about, you know, not only, you know, we didn't get the Stanley Cup, but we got something better. Like, we got the Sedin twins. And that, like, to me, like, it's that sort of thing. And it's so rare to have, there's so many aspects of these guys that is rare. But the fact that they choose to stay and be a part of the community going forward post-career, that is so rare on top of everything else that they've been able to accomplish. So, you know, that's something to be proud of as well, that these guys felt so welcomed and they feel so tied, closely tied to the community and the province that they want to stay. There's so much good feelings, obviously, about the week. But you're right. Being proud of these guys and a team you're proud of and a group that battled hard and competed and, you know, even though they failed to get it done, it was really a special era.
I DM'd you the Panarin thing, so hopefully you have a chance to check that out. But
that'll be the play of the week.
Did you check out also the Zach Cassian incident?
I did. Yeah. What do you want to touch on first?
Just, you know, we were talking about we want so often the player safety department to you know, penalize intent. And it's hard to figure out at times. But you look at an incident like that, it's like that's clear intent to injure, whether that's what he was trying to do or not. It's like as soon as you turn your blade onto someone, that's intending to injure. Is there a punishment that is, you know, too light when it comes to this sort of stuff?
Well, and you're right. Punishing intent, that's a tough thing to measure. But at some point, you just punish stupidity. Like, you, it's this is a one of the problems I have in the game, and it's a lot of things go into it. But and I see it in minor hockey. Like when I first started coaching minor hockey, I go in front of the net to pull pucks out of the net, and I'm getting shots fired off my legs, and I'm like, why are you raising the puck? There's a guy here with no equipment on. And I'm like, oh, these kids have never played on the outdoor ice. They don't understand the code of you don't raise the puck. You need to play a little bit more careful because you don't wear equipment. From a day one, these kids are invincible with all the equipment they wear. And hey, I'm not saying they need to learn how to play without face shields and all of that, but that this byproduct of invincibility coming up, it changes a little bit that respect. And it's that old argument of, well, guys didn't put their elbows up when gut players didn't wear helmets and face masks and all of that. I mean, I get it. It's 2020. You need that protection. Absolutely. But to me, as far as a punishment being too light, like I think you got to come down. I think it's supposed to be an automatic match penalty. And when you read the rule book and I look at that and I just say, hey, like this is, you know what you're doing. And that comes back to what I was getting at. It's like you have to be aware of what your skate is doing when the blade is up or when the blade is off the ice. It's far too dangerous. It is so sharp and it's so dangerous. We've seen so many scary incidents of cuts from an accidental point of view. Can't imagine if you would have made contact with an unprotected part of the player's body, it would have been a really scary incident.
Now we have to ask you about the Panarin shootout winner. Thoughts?
Yeah, you know, look, I'm all for creativity, and I'll probably surprise. I don't mind it. Like I look at it and I'm like, these guys are so good now. He doesn't stop. Yes, the puck does come backwards away from the goal line a little bit, but he's still in total control of it. I know they got away from the I like the fact that they've gotten away from the Spinorama goal, the Ryan Shannon, the guy who put it on the map here, because the reason I really didn't like that play was you could actually interfere with the goalie. And when Habib Boulin cross-checked him down and was so mad about it, there was sort of that hindrance that Shannon put into the play and made it so he couldn't come across. The fact he pulls it back, I mean, that's a pretty good skill move right there by Panarin. But I get why you'd be mad in the moment. Because it's like, what is the rule? It has to be clear. If you're going to allow it, allow it. But I'm going to surprise you guys. I don't mind that goal.
Alex Auld, getting soft in the goaltenders fraternity, joins us here every single Friday on Canuck Central. Maybe you'll rebound with this one. Jacob Markstrom, we all know about the backdrop of the contract conversation, and the latest reports say, hey, they're not close yet. They're still working on it, but they're not close yet. Have you tried to put yourself in his position, Aldi, and figure out what it would be worth to you to stay?
Yeah, it's extremely tough to do. There's so many factors. One of them is you've got to look around and see, you know, who else is up and what other spots. Like if you're going to play this game and you're going to play the negotiating game and try to be tough about it as a player, you have to say, all right, well, what are my alternatives? What are the options? And you start by looking at potential empty seats. The issue with this is it's math, right? The more empty seats, the more guys there are to fill them. And it's a game of musical chairs. And as much as you want to get your worth and as much as you want to say as a player, like, this is my one opportunity to really cash in. And at Markstrom's age and when he's hitting his peak, this is it for him, right? It's not like some goalies will peak in their earlier mid 20s and they're like, okay, like I could get probably two lucrative 4 or 5 year deals out of this body and out of my career. But for Markstrom, like this is it for him. But you also got to have a place to land, and you look around and this is kind of an unprecedented year in terms of some goalies who are available and out there. And as much as I think there are a lot of goaltending coaches who really like Jacob Markstrom and look at him and are so impressed with the body of work in terms of this last year and a half now, the way he's been able to improve and the way he's shown that obviously he's willing to work in that commitment. The goalie coaches are willing to say, hey, I'm impressed by this guy. But there's a difference between that and then putting it on the line and saying, all right, I'm willing to go to the GM and stake my career as a goalie coach on this one player. That's a whole nother thing. And especially when you don't have the body of work, you don't have Bobrovsky last year with a couple of Vezina trophies as part of your backdrop and saying, hey, like this is a guy I can go to bat for. And he's also got these traditional items and trophies to go here. And so you can sell the fan base on it. That's a tough thing to do. For Jacob Markstrom, I think there is a value in Vancouver. I think there's a value in this Swedish culture here, and there is an importance to it. But to put a dollar figure on that for me is impossible. The one thing I would caution any player against, especially a goalie, is you don't want to end up being Thomas Vokoun. The year he was a free agent, everyone thought he was going to cash in, and then he ended up on a one-year deal in Washington. And that is something where it's like, hey, you look around and the stories go on and on. Byron Defoe was in Toronto meetings, thought he had a deal locked up when he was a free agent with Boston. The next day he went back to MLSE and Ed Belfour walked out of the office with the contract. And then Byron Defoe had to sign in Atlanta and things were never the same for him. So it's you just want to make sure you have a seat at the end of the day when the music stops. But Jacob Markstrom, if you're the Canucks, you've got to get this done. I will say, though, from the organization's point of view, I like the fact that they're not just rolling over. They didn't do it for Edler. They played hardball. They stuck to what they wanted. And also, it seems that way with Markstrom, that they want to get something done, but it's not at whatever the player wants and whatever the player is going to dictate.
Really quickly, this is probably a bad time. Maybe we can pick this up next week. It's just the goalie coach aspect of this is really interesting because he's 31, right? And it's, yes, he's done a great job with Ian Clark, but does the next guy want to say, hey, I want you to play my way now? It's different when Bobrovsky at 24 meets Ian Clark than it is for Jacob Markstrom to latch on with a new coach and say, hey, I want you to tweak some things to fit my style now.
If you're trying to tweak Jacob Markstrom at this point to play your style, you're an idiot goalie coach and you shouldn't be in the NHL.
Right.
Like, honestly, like if you are trying to change... If you are trying to change something that Ian Clark's implemented, just quit.
Alex,
I know
Sol-
I had to keep it tight, so that was what I did.
Fair
Alex
enough.
Sol-
anyway,
you know,
if you want to see shootout goals, check out Pavel Barber's Instagram and Twitter. One from, I think it was in Sweden. Unbelievable. Guy comes in full speed, and then he sort of backhand flips it up in the air, knocks it out of the air, and puts it in by the goalie. Now, that's controversial, too, because that puck went backwards, too. But it was sick, so if you can do it, allow it. Please, we need that creativity.
Alex Auld knows his tweaking, knows his twerking as well. Happy Valentine's Day.
I don't even know what to say to that. You too. Hey, have a great weekend, Scott. I know these weeks are long for you, buddy. So
thanks,
just
pal.
Enjoy. Yeah.
Thanks, Aldi. That is Alex Auld. Joins us every single Friday. Joins you guys every single Monday. Will that be happening on Family Day this week? I know.
No, there's a Giants game on Monday, so there's no program. But there is a program tonight.
Oh, you guys don't work on Monday.
No, we're off. I'll be here. Walks and Sat won't be. Go figure. They're at Dyson Ice though tonight, so a long host of people as sitting week comes to a close,
maybe including Ryan Kessler. Should be good. Reach Deep is up next. Have yourselves a great Family Day weekend. We are back here Monday morning. You need your sports fix. Jamie and I will be here 9 a.m. Scott Rintoul show goes then. Have a great weekend. Enjoy Reach Deep right here in your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.